We're experiencing extraordinary times in this state. And what I want to do, my objective in just a few moments, is to put in perspective where we're going as a state and what it might mean to you. And to thank so many who were responsible for the breakout sessions that we have had today and for the interaction that has been provided and for the overviews that have been articulated. Josh James, one of my favorites, was here earlier today. And so many are participating in making the connections that are providing for, I think, the most successful business state in America. And there are all kinds of reasons why many of us in this room believe that to be the case. But in today's world, at least nationally, we're hearing about the housing crash. We're hearing about subprime loan problems. It's a confusing environment. The credit markets are freezing up. The stock market has gone from up 400 a couple of days ago to down 200 yesterday to up 108 when I stepped out of my office today. Collapse of Bear Stearns, whoever would have guessed, $2 a share, Dave. Leaving us on the doorstep of what could be a recession in the minds of some, the Fed. The Federal Reserve has lowered the federal funds rate, the overnight transfer rate, 75 basis points in the last few days, down to 2.25%. The discount rate, or the direct lending rate, which I think is most important to most of you in business, is now at 2.5%. A lot of uncertainty out there. What's behind it all? Where did it begin? I'm not sure that anyone can rationally explain what is behind all of this, but let me give you a sense of what I think is behind some of what we're experiencing. I think a lot of it started back in 1998, if you want to trace the roots of the crisis that we're looking at nationally. The real estate market became a bargain for many buyers years ago. Wall Street made it easier to get loans. The mortgage business fundamentally went from local to global with a whole lot of new financial instruments that were made available. And like with so many other forms of innovation, it seems that it was soon too much of a good thing. The subprime mortgages were there for those who were stretching to afford a home. They came with higher interest rates, even if they were disguised a little bit at the beginning by lower initial rates. And the subprime mortgages were then bundled by many of the really smart people on Wall Street and sold to different groups of investors, and then leveraged way up. And we're just now kind of understanding what all of this means to all of us. And because housing prices nationwide had never fallen before, who should have worried about what was going on? It was never going to reverse its trend of always going upward. We were in safe territory. This scenario, then, I think, was exacerbated by two fundamental problems. One, home buyers were putting too little equity down on their new homes. Two, the Federal Reserve made all of this possible by sharply reducing interest rates to prevent a double-dip recession after what many of you remember as the technology burst of 2000. So this toxic combination, the sheer number of bad investments coupled with the potential of these bad investments to mushroom and proliferate into more, has shocked Wall Street, even as we watch the financial channels today, shocked Wall Street into a state of deep conservation. So firms are hoarding cash today instead of lending it out until they somehow understand how deep this housing crisis will be and, in fact, how exposed they are as firms. So therefore, some investors and institutions are facing what I call the double whammy effect. Lenders are demanding their money back, and in some cases, shutting the door on new loans going out. Hence, you have the Bear Stearns effect, and who knows where this is going to metastasize as we move forward. Suffice it to say, bubbles lead to busts. And busts lead to panic. And panic can lead to deep economic downturns. That is the state of the nation in which we find ourselves. This is the environment nationally. And we must not let, as participants in this great economy, we must not let the negativity of what we're hearing about throughout the nation become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Our state is resilient and it is strong, and I believe we are going to remain such. Yes, we're cruising along at 30,000 feet and we're experiencing some wind shears, generally tied to the nation's economy, but we're doing okay. Just promise me this in your own individual corners of life and your individual pursuits and endeavors, that we not allow the nation's picture to somehow cloud our own thinking here in the state of Utah, and that we not let it become a self-fulfilling prophecy, because we're better than that and we're stronger than that as a state. And let me tell you why. Our fundamentals pretty much tell the story. Our demographics are extraordinary. Any state in America would want our demographics. I'm sure Dave Bagley at IM Flash thinks every day that he has landed in a mecca for finding the right kinds of people to work in his facility. Young, well-educated, productive, high immigration into the state, 100,000 people last year, minus deaths of 15,000, net 85,000. That's our run rate as a state, year in and year out now, swallowing essentially a city the size of Ogden whole every year. That's good for growth. Third highest population growth rate in the nation today. Youngest population in the nation. We are young and we are dynamic in the state. One of our truly great assets. Third highest life expectancy in the nation. Almost 79 years. 11th lowest poverty rate in the nation. From a managerial standpoint, and I see my friends in the legislature who are here, and we have them to thank in large part for what we see and read about. Third highest revenue surplus year in our state's history. We've had three of them. Now, you would read the headlines during the last legislative session and think that we've fallen into this great abyss from which there's no recovery without reading the real numbers and seeing that we only had a $775 million surplus as opposed to a $1.1 billion surplus as opposed to a $1.7 billion surplus. 3 years of excellent growth revenue in this state. Largest rainy day fund in history. Now, just to give you a sense of this, when I came into government from business, you know, we work on the leverage principle. Every one of the businesses that I was associated with before was leveraged to the hilt, to the point where you can barely sleep at night. You're afraid that you're going to hit the wall any day now. Not so in government. Your debt to equity ratio is probably 1% or something about that. Highest rainy day fund in the history of our state. A lot of money squirreled away in anticipation of a downturn. AAA bond rating in this state. Well, you might say, well, that's pretty cool. Well, it is pretty cool. There are only a half dozen states in America left with a AAA bond rating, which gives us a preferred cost of capital when we reach out and try to finance projects like the Great I-15 project that we're going to be looking to next year through Utah County, which is going to be probably the biggest infrastructure project we've ever done in the history of the state. We're going to be looking for a preferred cost of capital that we're going to get as a state because of our AAA bond rating. Finally, best managed state in the nation. And nobody can take credit for that. That's the amalgamation of a lot of good work by a whole lot of people, both in the legislative branch and the executive branch, done by the Pew Center, which is a very notable group that does those rankings. Job growth in our state, second highest in the nation. We're doing all right there, behind Wyoming. You know, we got to think about buying Wyoming. You know, why is Wyoming even a state? I mean, the merger and acquisition work shouldn't stop in state government, right? They're ahead of us a little bit in terms of job growth, and of course it's tied to natural resources. And we are too, to a certain extent. The picture is good on job growth. Construction is down a bit. Technology is down a little bit, but every other category is up. Unemployment rate, 3% at a time when our nation is knocking on the door of about 5%. It's fourth or fifth lowest in the nation. And it, too, remains one of our biggest challenges as a state today. What we're hearing from you is, where do we find people to accommodate the expansions that we are planning for the future in this state? That is a challenge, and we need to do something about it. Highest personal income growth in the country. This is the one I think we all ought to be proud of. We've complained forever about the jobs that are created in the state and how they don't necessarily carry with them a corresponding or concomitant bump up in income. Well, we're seeing the highest personal income growth in the country, just under 10%, which says something very good about where our jobs are going and the kinds of jobs that are coming into the state. Home appreciation, we're leading the nation there too, but you're finding something quite interesting to be taking place. We're just now, with the month-over-month increases that we have seen, leading the nation month-over-month for practically a year, we're just now bumping on the knocking on the door of an average home price that is roughly $220,000, which is basically where the nation is in terms of average home value. So what you find here is not what you find in Clark County or not what you find in Maricopa County, where there is artificiality built into the marketplace. I think you find housing generally in this state that is consistent with real market value, which is to our advantage. Travel and tourism, all categories are experiencing gains. The ski industry, thank you, those of you who are involved in Ski Utah. Fourth consecutive year of record-breaking numbers. Now, what you're seeing this year, what you're hearing, I should say, are a lot of foreign accents on the slopes. Why is it? It's because the value of the dollar has plummeted, and we're bargain basement, basically, for a lot of people who never before could afford to come here to ski, and this year are finally able to do that. Now, what's happening in our state from a real economic development standpoint? Let's take Barnes Aerospace in Ogden, for example, a leading manufacturer of aerospace components in Utah for some time. Today, the Barnes Group is expanding its manufacturing footprint by 50%. They're adding hundreds of highly paid and technically skilled positions to the workforce right here in Utah. In the words of their CEO, Greg Milsek, Barnes Group searched the globe for the best place to expand. After a close examination of possible locations, workforce, and economic environment, Utah was the clear choice. We found the Utah workforce to be highly skilled, and the Utah State government a good partner for Barnes, and our growth objectives on a global scale. Thank you, Barnes Aerospace, for looking throughout the entire world and concluding what we all know to be the case, that this is the best place to do business. Let's look at Charlotte Pipe in Cedar City, a 107-year-old company and market leader based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Wanted to sell plastic pipes and fittings to the West Coast plumbing sector. The fast-track process that they were exposed to here in this state took only 7 months from permits to a finished 148,000-square-foot facility on 50 affordable acres that will begin producing pipe this very month. We now have Port 15 Industry Park in Cedar City. And get this, the state passed an economic development tax increment incentive, and the local government and the school district created an economic development authority, an EDA, to encourage the company to build their new plant in Cedar City. 20% of the taxes collected by the EDA will be used to create a workforce housing fund. And it will provide low-interest loans and essential to the essential service employees who we all need in our communities, fire, police, and educators, something we need to do more of. So to Mayor Jerry Sherritt, who is here in the crowd, I say, you rock, man. You are the best. Not only a great mayor, but you are a visionary when it comes to economic development. And were it not for you and the way in which you have been presenting your city, from an economic development standpoint, we wouldn't have this great Cedar Pipe success story. So thank you for what you do. Disney Interactive, a small Utah company called Avalanche Software was founded back in 1985 by four great innovators here in this state who saw a wonderful opportunity in the video game industry. Over the years, the company grew to roughly 100 employees. They caught the attention of the Disney company who bought Avalanche in 2005. Now Disney Interactive has decided that Utah is where it wants to grow significantly in their interactive media studio capacity. So today I am pleased to have with us Mr. Bill Van Overbeck, who is Operations Director for Avalanche Disney Interactive. Disney Interactive today will be announcing that more than 500 extremely well-paid jobs will be coming here to Utah in the video game sector as a result of what they have experienced in the state. So to you, Bill, I say thank you very much for what you are doing. At a time when just the opposite ought to be taking place, we've got some great jobs that are still in the pipeline. So what is our goal as a state? We can't walk out of this room until we all understand fundamentally what our state goal is from an economic development standpoint. Our goal has and always will be to have the premier economy in the United States, plain and simple. That is our goal. And we will not rest until we can prove that point year after year after year. So it's therefore no surprise that we're receiving some good accolades and recognitions nationally. The Beacon Hill Institute cited us as the most competitive state for business. The Kauffman Foundation, the most dynamic state in America. Now, I don't know about you, but I take the most dynamic state over practically anything else, any other category, because dynamism suggests that you've got a sense of entrepreneurship that is thriving and alive and well in your state. There's a sense of energy that exists, and that is awfully important given the trajectory that we're on. ABC News, in case you didn't catch it last week, Salt Lake City, number one for jobs. Forbes Magazine, number two, best state for business. CNBC, number three, America's top 10 states that they rolled out just a while ago. And we just received yesterday a letter from a very important Polina survey, the Polina Report, which is, some of you in this room know, is the gold standard for economic development evaluations. And all I would say is stay tuned because they're going to be rolling out their top 10 list next week. And I think we're going to find ourselves in a very prominent position there. So thank you for doing what you are doing to ensure that we are recognized nationally for our work. Again, our goal is to have the premier economy in the United States. Nothing short will suffice. So what are we going to do to maintain our preeminence? Let me just run through a few things that are important that you're going to see all of us working on an ongoing and continuing basis. Number one, with members of the legislature, we have revamped our tax structure in this state. We've had the most significant tax reform in our state's history. Now, this is done with an eye toward competitiveness. We in state government know that all we can do is create a more propitious and competitive environment for you, the entrepreneurs, the investors, and the business folks. You fill in the blanks in between. If we don't have a competitive environment, no one's going to knock at our door, and our businesses in the state are going to leave. A big part of that is our tax policy. We've addressed that now. In January, I think everybody saw that our taxes are changing. Income taxes have gone down 30%, 7% down to 5%. It's a time when we're finally getting some kudos. We're doing the right thing from a tax policy standpoint. Number two, fund to funds. And thank you, Jerry, and so many others who are involved in the fund to funds here. $100 million to $300 million. I think we can finally say in this category that we are approaching best in class in the entire nation. Over 1,000 Utah jobs have been created because of the fund's portfolio and what it is attracting to the state. 25 Utah companies have been created within the fund's portfolio, receiving $127 million in investment as a result of the good work that is going on. Number three, recruitment.
Companies are moving to our state for 21st century reasons. They want livability, they want access to workforce, they want good education. And did I say they want livability? When you can do business anywhere, all of a sudden quality of life and livability become the most important aspect of economic development. We have cornered the market, my friends, on livability and quality of life, and this is one of the reasons that we are doing well. So what are we finding on the recruitment side? Procter & Gamble, as Lan mentioned a minute ago. The very first greenfield site in 30 years, Procter & Gamble is doing here in Box Elder County. ATK, Ron Dittemore is here. A longtime partner in this great state has now brought the headquarters of ATK Ammunition System to the state. And as their CEO, Mark DeYoung, said recently, we could have gone anywhere, and we chose Utah for its workforce and its quality of life. Number four, global opportunities for Utah companies. Now, Lou Kramer is here, and if you haven't met Lou Kramer, I want you to shake his hand. He's the CEO of our World Trade Center here in Utah, a one-stop shop for businesses that are trying to figure out the big, complex, and oftentimes murky world out there. You want market intelligence, you want export financing leads, you want to talk to experts who know something about the markets you're trying to export your product into, and you just, for whatever reason, can't quite figure it out. What better thing can we do than to have a one-stop shop for all things international business? Lou Kramer, who's about the best in the country at this particular thing, who in his previous life ran all of the trade promotion and Commerce Department embassy offices throughout the world, knows something about this. We've done trade missions, Lou, to Mexico, Canada, China, and India. We set forth to conquer four countries that we argued were the most important to our long-term economic vitality. We've covered all of them, and it's now time that we continue building those pieces culturally, economically, and educationally. Lou Kramer is here, and he's doing a great job with respect to the World Trade Center. Fifth and finally, the Rural Fast Track Program. And I want those of you who are interested to tune into what's going on here. For the first time in our state's history, we're finally listening to what people are saying out there. We are providing incentives to local businesses that want to expand and grow like any other business. And in the past, it's always been showing some sort of deference to those coming in from the outside. Well, we've heard you speak, and we've heard your concerns about the inconsistency in that policy, and for the first time in our state's history, we've changed that. Rural projects, as a result of what is going on, now account for 60% of the state's economic development. 60% is happening in the rural parts of the state. We have decided that we will continue to take care of our own, because like Josh James and others who are here, our best ideas and our best intellectual property is going to come right out of the minds of our homegrown entrepreneurs. Now, our future focus. What are we going to do to make sure that we get to where we need to be, that we maintain the position of preeminence from an economic development standpoint? Number one, we've also heard from you that we need to improve the way in which the state is conducting its workforce development and its technical training. I, too, am not totally convinced that we have arrived at our preferred destination in that regard. When we hear that we have critical workforce needs in this state, where are the mechanics? Where are the welders? Where are the machine tool operators that keep many of the shops going day in and day out? We're not doing a good job in this particular area. We need to improve the way that we are approaching workforce development and technical training, and we're going to do it. We're going to back up this year and take a good look at the way in which we're approaching workforce development, workforce training, and we're going to get it right. And we're going to make sure that we maximize the capacity of our applied technology centers that today are not being maximized. They're doing a great job, but we need to maximize capacity so that we're able to produce the kind of workforce that so many of you in an operating sense and in a manufacturing sense need. Now, after a pretty good start, we have some Department of Labor grants that I think are taking us in a very propitious direction. The Davis Applied Technology College was awarded $2.2 million, a grant that is going to assist in their teaching programs as it relates to aerospace, Ron, defense, and sporting goods. In case you hadn't been up to Ogden recently, there's a small sporting goods, winter sports cluster that is taking off big time there. And we are all of a sudden becoming a focal point in the country as a sports mecca for manufacturing, for headquartering, and it's a very, very exciting thing to watch play out. Similarly, Utah Valley State College was awarded $1.7 million to increase the number and quality of graduates in their mechatronics degree program. So we are, I think, making some good progress as it relates to workforce development and training, but we need to do a whole lot more. And we've heard from you that that needs to be an area that we provide some focus, effort, and concentration. Two, the area of education, public ed. I think we're doing a great job as it relates to teacher compensation. You've heard me talk about it before, and you're going to hear me talk about it more and more as we move into the future. Not just teacher compensation, but more opportunities for our kids generally. We don't have enough in the way of opportunities for kids, all of whom enter the classroom and learn a little bit differently. We just haven't gotten that one right, and we need to work, we need to sharpen our pencils on that. Teacher compensation, however, for me, and I think many of you, is critical to making sure that connection is made with the student in the classroom. We've seen a 19% increase in teacher compensation in 3 years. Now, I challenge you to find another state in America that has done more for teacher compensation or general education spending than we have right here in this state. That basically amounts to just over $5,000 on average for new teachers over the last 3 years. So are we slowly catching our neighboring states that we have long been behind? Absolutely we are. And there will be a point in time in the next few years that we'll actually pass them and probably pass the national average as it relates to teacher compensation, because you cannot pay teachers enough for the work that they do and the way in which they are molding and shaping the minds of tomorrow to under education. And guaranteed, if we get this one right, combined with the next one that I'm going to tell you about, we can go a long way in solving the achievement gap that we have in this state and that every other state deals with. Early childhood development. We must get that kindergarten to third grade piece of education right. We've rolled out extended day kindergarten thanks to the legislature. There's more happening there than ever before. And we can extend it to other places in this state. As I go around to different school districts and hear the teachers and the parents and the administrators talk about how this is hitting the mark, you know that we're doing something awfully important for our young kids. K-3 literacy, K-3 numeracy, hitting the mark as it relates to developing these young minds. If we can combine that with a K-16 worldview, which is to suggest that every one of our kids will get a shot at higher ed in some way, shape, or form, our state will be unbeatable. We know that some people are going to go to research universities, some are going to go to community colleges, some are going to want to get a technical background. But in today's flat and competitive world, every kid in this state needs an opportunity for something at the higher ed level. And it also means taking the great ideas that are behind USTAR, the Utah Science, Technology, and Research Undertaking, and moving it back into our schools. We know what our industries of tomorrow are likely to be, and many of you are participants in them, at the higher ed level. It's time that we now take that philosophy and back it into our schools and ensure that from a math and a science and a language standpoint, that we have the kinds of students that are going to get out and do what needs to be done in this ever-complicated global marketplace. Third, health system reform. You've heard a lot about that, and there's much going on and much that we can look forward to. The current system, and we hear this from Lane Beatty and many others who are involved as business leaders in our state, is economically unsustainable. Healthcare costs are killing our small businesses in this state. It is an unsustainable trajectory that we are on. And therefore, we cannot wait. We must act. And we're doing something about it. And we're going to come out of this multi-year effort with health policies that are more accessible, that are more affordable, and that are more portable. And you have the legislature to thank for things like being able to buy on a pre-tax basis a health insurance policy, something that companies have been able to do, something that organizations have been able to do, but it's always been beyond the reach of the individual. So with you as entrepreneurs moving as quickly as you are, and with people undertaking a number of different jobs during their lifetime, it is important that beyond just the affordability aspect, we have portability. And it's going to take, in a sense, some insurance reform. There's no doubt about that. It's going to take the tax credits that I talked about. It's going to take a sense of transparency. And that is equipping our citizenry, consumers, with more information about what they're staring down when they go into the doctor's office. And when they go in for a procedure, what choices they have and what costs are then associated with those choices. What a great world that will be. Well, finally, let me say it's time we think big. Think big as it relates to things like a research park. I go back to 1968 when people in this state started talking about our very first research park. And by 1972, Governor Calvin Rampton launched the University of Utah Research Park. Some of you are located there. All of you are familiar with it. It spawned at the very beginning companies like Evans and Sutherland. And of course, they were famous for, among other things, streaming stars in the Star Trek program, which is a little bit of trivia that probably no one is familiar with. Today, the Research Park is a place known for innovation and great success. 42 companies, 4,700 employees call the park home, and annual in-state productivity that exceeds $550 million. 17 companies have launched from technologies developed out of this park in just the last year alone. So from 1972 right through to where we sit today, we've seen things like Mario Capecchi, who's knocked it out of the park with respect to his genomics research, awarded a Nobel Prize. We see the Brain Institute that is conquering diseases like Alzheimer's, strengthening brain synapses. We see players like Myriad Genetics, who are leading the way in addressing and finding cures for cancer through discoveries like the BRCA1 and 2 breast cancer genes. Now, imagine if we sat around in this room back in 1972 and tried to imagine all of the things that our state would dream up and conquer and develop and innovate. Our minds would be boggled if we were to sit down and do the tally sheet based upon where we are today. So in northern Utah, outside of our state's largest employer, Hill Air Force Base, a new development is emerging, and I want us to think about this in the same terms. Falcon Hill Aerospace Research Park. Many of you here don't know much about it, but you will. Aerospace and aviation is one of the economic clusters that we have focused on in this state, I think with great acuity and great energy. We have a focus in this state like never before on materials, composites, on propulsion systems, things that are really going to make a huge difference. As we think about where we are going as a state, I want us to think in terms of the research parks that we spawned in 1972 and what we have to show for them today. And I want us all to think about what this Falcon Hill Aerospace Research Park, as we just kind of get it off the ground today, is likely to spawn 35 years from now, if we're all lucky enough to gather in this room and do the tally sheet from it. And I suspect we're all going to be mind-boggled by the ways in which Utah has again been at the forefront of economic development, creativity, entrepreneurship, and innovation. Finally, our success depends on you. And if you're not giving us feedback on what is working and what isn't working, we don't function as a state. So you know who our head of economic development is. It's this guy sitting right here, Jason Perry. You know where the buck stops. It stops in my office. We take responsibility for it. There always needs to be a responsible party for anything worth doing in life. We are the responsible party. We've heard from many of you here in this room. We want to hear more. That's the only way we're going to continually refine and make even better than we've seen in the last few years the performance of this state. So thank you, thank you, thank you for doing everything you have done in making Utah the greatest state in America. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you so very much.